ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're back with Dads on the Air.
And welcome back to Dads on the Air this 22nd day of November 2011. For those who are paying attention, it is the 43rd anniversary of the assassination of President Kennedy. So those of us who were around at the time, that was a big day, and we've got a huge day today. But first of all, this is Bill Cable from Mediate Now, and in the studio with me today is Ian Purdy from ianpurdy.com.
Yes, good morning, Bill. Good morning, listeners.
And so in today's show, we have a very, very interesting interview with Gary Sillett, who is the founder of an organisation called Pillars of Strength. This is a very new organisation, and it is providing a unique service of respite and support for men facing significant family trauma. So it'll be interesting to talk to Gary. And we'll also be speaking with Michael Bourne, who is a neonatal nurse in the Newborn Care Centre of the Royal North Shore Hospital in Sydney. So it'll be very inspiring to speak to these gentlemen about what's going on in this area. So before we get on with our interviews, there's always a few things going on, and we might just mention the International Men's Day, which occurred on Saturday. That's the 19th of November. You might recall we've had three shows dedicated to International Men's Day, and I wonder how it went in your area. There have been some articles. There's one here I'm looking at from The Guardian in the UK, in which there is an article looking at the common response to International Men's Day when people are asked about it, because many people still do not know that it even exists, even though the movement has spread in the last 12 years to at least 50 countries, and it's won the blessing of the United Nations. Nevertheless, the common response was something along the lines of, oh, I thought every day was International Men's Day. And this then led on to general hilarity. But really, what should be up for discussion on International Men's Day? And I guess the first thing that comes to mind is male-specific health issues. And, of course, Movember falls right in the middle goes right around International Men's Day, because Movember is for all of the month of November, and Movember is the charity that raises money both for prostate cancer and for men's depression in Australia. Both wonderful areas for our support. If you want to find out more about Movember, just go to their website, go to Movember, and hopefully you can sign up to be a Mo Bro or a Mo Sister and raise some money for these very important issues. So just, I suppose, a few things that have come out of International Men's Day. Apart from, as I said, the health issues, there are the political issues. There's too much tolerance of prison rape. There's child visitation and custody policy that needs to be developed. There's the underachievement of boys in education, a particular theme of International Men's Day in 2011. There's death and injury at work. There's provision of domestic violence and abuse services to male victims, not just the female victims as currently exists in our society. So we would all benefit from this annual opportunity to acknowledge the work that men's do, and not just the high-profile dads, but what about the stay-at-home dads, the charity volunteers, the community sports coaches? They're all under-recognised. And in saying this also, let's not pretend that it in any way takes away from International Women's Day or some of the other events put on for women. I mean, just because we have St. Patrick's Day doesn't claim that it's an insult to the English or the Welsh, and the same must be true of International Men's Day. So here's hoping everybody had a great day on the 19th of November, and there'll be a bigger and better International Men's Day in 2012, you can be sure of that.
Yep, it seems to be growing momentum as it goes along, which is great. Good to see.
Now, Ian, you got something?
Well, I've got a couple of articles here, mainly to do with schoolies. This time of year, of course, so the schools break up and the kids sort of go off and have these wild parties away from from their basically whoever's supposed to be keeping an eye on them. I have here from the Daily Telegraph on Saturday, "Schoolies Risk Barley High" was the headline. Bruce McDougall and Henry Budd have it written. Barley and Fiji are becoming the destinations of choice for Australian schoolies, but the thousands taking their party offshore face potentially more serious hazards than the traditional Gold Coast or Byron Bay bashes. Schoolie celebrations are expanding so rapidly outside Australia that worried parents are booking their own holidays to spy on their children. There's another related one here from the also from the Daily Telegraph. This occurred last Thursday, the 17th, under the heading "Parents Drug Kits." Teenagers attending schoolies events in New South Wales have more than police drug busks to fear because parents are buying chemical wipes to secretly monitor if their kids are users. Drug Guard can detect traces of cannabis, ecstasy and other drugs by being exposed to wallets or mobile phones. With the annual frenzy of grog-fueled revelling around the corner, an Australian company says parents are snapping up the home drug testing kits. Importer Craig Hart has been quoted as saying, "When they come back, parents don't even have to tell them. They can just test their mobile phone or wallets, quite a few different items, and the kids don't even have to know that they've been spied on." I suppose, I think schoolies, I mean, the fact that they go off and that they are, if they are taking illicit drugs and drinking too much, this is something that we really have to look at culturally, that the whole thing. This has got to quite a ridiculous extreme now that, you know, parents are buying drug kits so they can drug test their kids to find out if they have taken drugs. Well, if they have taken them, surely it's too late. Really, it would appear that there's a lot. The schoolies, which started off, I'm sure, as something fairly innocent, has turned basically into a dangerous alcohol and drug fueled horror show for some people. It can really go quite horribly astray. Parents and children alike need to be aware of the dangers inherent in schoolies and these celebrations at the end of the year.
Yeah, we didn't even have schoolies in my day, but it's certainly got a lot bigger in recent years, and I guess the particular worry is that some people who are not just out of school join in the festivities, and they could pose a particular danger to these very young children. I mean, let's face it, they're only 17, 18. They've been studying for months, and they're suddenly let loose. It'd have to be regarded as a dangerous situation.
Well, it is. It's a recipe for disaster, let's face it. I mean, you'd think that, you know, society would have a bit more of a controlled view of what's acceptable and what's not, and just sort of send them up the Gold Coast or send them off to Fiji now, send them offshore. I mean, surely, like with the recent incident with that 14-year-old boy getting busted for marijuana in Bali, I mean, that should ring alarm bells to any parent that, you know, you don't want to send your kids off to these foreign countries. I mean, we still don't know the details of that particular case, whether he was framed, whether, you know, what exactly happened. But, you know, the schoolie seems to be a particular time of risk for young people. And people, of course, if you go out and you do something stupid, it might just be one night, and you know, it might be completely out of character, the behaviour you indulge in, but you can get a police record, which will stay with you forever if you get caught possessing illegal substances or whatever, doing something stupid, knocking over signposts. Who knows? Anything that drunken teenagers get up to can land you with a criminal conviction, which will accompany you for the rest of your life and will affect your ability to travel and various other things. So there is a lot at stake here, and it's not, you know, this idea that it's just a big party and everyone lets their hair down and has a great time really needs to be looked at, because under these circumstances, a lot of people will be suffering consequences of these so-called schoolies celebrations.
Okay, now we mentioned earlier the International Men's Day on the 19th of November. Also coming up, and I will only mention this briefly, but on the 25th of November is the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women. This is celebrated in Australia, or observed in Australia, perhaps we should say. On that day, it's the White Ribbon Day in Australia, and there are hundreds of people nominated as ambassadors for White Ribbon Day. I would just ask that people who want to become involved in this start off by looking at the real facts in this area. I had the opportunity last week to speak to one of these ambassadors, a very well-known figure in the community, and when I asked why was it that the White Ribbon Day was limited to male violence against females, and it completely ignored violence against children, male against male, women against males. There are a whole lot of other areas which definitely deserve some attention. His response was quite extraordinary, I thought. He said, after considering the question for a while, he said, because I think that 97% of the violence is males against females.
Quite he extraordinary. He didn't come up with any statistics back that opinion up. No. That's just kind of what he personally felt at the time, and that was worth acting on and worth making policy over, and quite ridiculous, really, when you think about it.
So it makes one wonder what these ambassadors are told when they become ambassadors for White Ribbon Day, and it also indicates the level of misunderstanding and lack of knowledge that's out there in a community about the real situation with domestic violence. In that connection, I referred him to the very good 1 in 3 site, where you will get some accurate figures and find out what's really going on. I can only hope that he has access to the 1 in 3 site. And
well, everybody, he's just really got to take the trouble to look. I mean, everybody has access. If you have access to the internet, you have access to the 1 in 3 site. And if you are a white ribbon person, if you're going around parroting these ridiculous figures, you have a responsibility, a duty to get to the bottom of what the actual figures are, and you can find them through the Australian Bureau of Statistics. They're not some great mystery thing that only occur on these radical, left-wing websites. I mean, these figures are in the public domain, and anybody who cares to do their homework can find out what the figures actually are and not have to persist with this nonsense. That 97% of violence is men towards women. That's just absolute nonsense. That is a completely ignorant assumption. And somebody in a position where they're influencing public policy, where they are an ambassador for a movement, I mean, this is disgraceful. These people, have a duty to know what they're talking about.
They do. Now, just one place where you could go to find out some of the real figures in this area, there is a new book being launched next week called Breaking the Silence, A Practical Guide for Male Victims of Domestic Abuse. Now, this is a new book by Dr. Elizabeth Chelley, who has been a guest on our program. She is a psychologist and author, and speaks frequently at seminars on men's mental health. Now, this new book, Breaking the Silence, A Practical Guide for Male Victims of Domestic Abuse, will be available after its launch next week. But as a special offer, you can get a pre-release copy of the book. There is a special offer going with this pre-release for just $23.95. You can get there are 50 pre-launch copies available, and you will then find out five things to avoid when verbally defending yourself, how to understand her anger, tips for keeping the kids safe, and empowering men, how to be your own man without apology. So if you'd like to take advantage of that pre-launch offer, as I say, $23.95, and you get the copy of that book from Dr. Elizabeth Chelley, you can go to www.drcelley.com.au/pre-launch offer. So just one more time, if you want to get that pre-launch copy of this great new book, Breaking the Silence, go to www.drcelley.com.au/pre-launch offer, and you can take advantage of this special offer. And I should mention that we will be speaking to Dr. Chelley in our show coming up on the 6th of December. So put that in your diaries. That'll be a good one to listen to Dr. Elizabeth Chelley, who is a very entertaining and informative speaker. And she'll be speaking about her new book, Breaking the Silence, A Practical Guide for Male Victims of Domestic Abuse. She'll be here right here on Dads on the Air on the 6th of December.
Okay, well, we might just go to a short break.
Thank you. daddy, you know you make me cry. How can you love me? I don't understand why. Oh, daddy, if I can make you see, if there's been a fool around, it's got to be me. Yes, it's got to be me. Oh, daddy, you soothe me with your smile. You're letting me know you're the best thing in my life. Oh, daddy, if I can make you see, if there's been a fool around, it's got to be me. Yes, it's got to be me. Why are you right when I'm so wrong? I'm so weak, but you're so strong. Everything you do is just so right. I can't walk away from you, baby, if I try.
Grow so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child.
Dad's in distress. 1300 853 437.
We're back with Dad's on the air. And welcome back to Dad's on the Air this 22nd day of November 2011. Going through the articles here, I noticed there's another one in relation to the recently released Britain's Family Justice Review. You might recall this is an extraordinary review put out in which it came up with the conclusions that fathers are not entitled to equal parenting of their children, that fathers are not entitled to a meaningful relationship with their children post-divorce, and that grandparents have no right to a relationship with their grandchildren after the kids' parents have split up. This has been roundly criticised by many members of David Cameron's cabinet, including the Tory Minister of Work and Pensions, Ian Duncan-Smith, who plans to scuttle David Norgrove. It's David Norgrove's review, the Family Justice Review, and we can only hope that he succeeds. But
yeah, how could they come up with that? I mean, that just seems to fly in the face of all of the research. I mean, common sense, wisdom, you know, that just heads in the absolute opposite direction of everything that would appear to be sensible, you know?
Yes, well, you start off by asking what qualifications has this Norgrove fellow got as he headed up the review. It turns out he's a businessman with no experience in family law, and I think it can be fairly said he has no grasp of what goes on in the family courts as to what needs to be fixed or how to fix it. If he does, his review betrays no hint of that. So there is a movement going in Britain, and particularly when you look at David Cameron has said in the past, that he had planned to make his government the most family-friendly government ever. You'd have to say that if he touches this family justice review and its conclusions, his plans will backfire with a speed and intensity that he may want to be prepared for. I mean, you've only got to look at the recent riots in London, which point very much to a lack of fatherlessness or lack of fathers in the community, and I think David Cameron has recognised that. So let us hope that the Family Justice Review is filed in that big round container in the corner of the room and goes absolutely no further.
Yeah, forgotten about. Absolutely. It just sounds like nonsense. The idiots are still alive and well and still producing nonsense. I've got one here. This is from the Sun Herald last Sunday. Racing biological clock has risks is the heading. Rachel Brown has written, older mothers are driving an increase in the number of premature babies. For older mothers, wanting to have a second or third baby, it is a difficult decision. Do they try to get pregnant again as quickly as possible to beat the biological clock, or do they give their bodies a rest but run the risk of not conceiving again at all? A period of less than 6 to 9 months between the birth of one baby and the start of a new pregnancy heightened the chance of a preterm delivery, according to Dr. Fitzgerald, who is the clinical professor of paediatrics and child health at the Children's Hospital at Westmead. He also said there are many women who wait until their late 30s to start their family, and then they find they want to have subsequent children, he said. There is an urgency to get on with it because the biological clock is ticking, so they have no alternative but to have their children quite close together. But waiting too long may be a gamble, hence the timing dilemma. The higher the maternal age, the greater the risk of preterm delivery. So age in and of itself is a risk factor, Dr. Fitzgerald is quoted as saying. So there you go. So you're better off to have your children when you're young, in your 20s, to put off the career. Although in this day and age, it tends to be the other way around. Women tend to be putting off having children until they are established, until their careers are working, until they are financially secure, and then they feel that it's a good time to have their families. But of course, by then, they are not as biologically well equipped to do the business, basically, as it were. So there you go.
Yeah, that's been a topic around for a while.
I've got one more here. The families miners leave behind. Just a sad story on the side, basically. It's the other side of the mining boom. The partners fly in, fly out. Workers who are left holding the baby. Now the families are fighting for more help. Cosima Mariner has written, loneliness, isolation, disconnection, communication difficulties and stress. These are the afflictions usually suffered by the families of Defence Force personnel. But the families of fly-in, fly-out miners argue they also suffer. While defence families are provided with taxpayer-funded workshops and support groups to cope with prolonged separation, mining families say they are left to fend for themselves. They argue that better support services would improve employee retention and productivity and reduce relationship breakdowns and workplace accidents. So there you go. So there's a downside of the great mining boom that seems to be funding everything as we speak. It's yet another negative impact on families, it would appear. There don't seem to be very many positive impacts on families these days. Bill, what do you think about that?
Yes, certainly the mining boom has affected some unexpected areas. We might have to go to a short break, but look, we'll be back soon with our first guest, Gary Sillett, the founder of Pillars of Strength.
hard to take courage in a world full of people. You can lose sight of it all in the darkness inside you, make you feel so small. But I see your true colors shining through. I see your true.
Welcome back to Dad's on the Air this 22nd day of November 2011, and we are privileged now to speak to our next guest, Gary Sillett. And Gary is the founder of a very new organisation, Pillars of Strength, and this is an Australian first. It is a program to help dads cope in the neonatal intensive care unit. That's where the program will start, but we'll hear from Gary as to where it might go. Gary, good morning.
Good morning, Bill. How are you doing?
I'm very well. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Gary, I notice, first thing that strikes me is the logo, the Pillars of Strength logo, and I think it is a great logo. It's the two figures with their arms out, bearing the weight, I think. Is that the way you see it?
Yeah, very much so. It's like being a dad who actually tragically lost his child after 2 days last year in December. There was not much support around, but in essence, there is a lot of support, and there are a lot of men that actually go through this whole process, but they don't know that there's things out there that can help them. The logo sort of brings that together to sort of show that we are the pillar of strength, the individual, but there are many other people that actually are there to help you out in this situation, and that's the powerful message. It's like a team. You look at in terms of teams, of sports teams and otherwise, you're always arm in arm, shoulder to shoulder. It's like men said.
Yes, shoulder to shoulder instead of face to face.
That's right.
I really like that. And I suppose, is this your way of what you see as pillars of strength? I'm sorry, Isaac being your son.
Yeah, Isaac's my son. It unfortunately passed away. It's a legacy to Isaac in my own certain way, but it's also something that's like through the void that I actually found within going through the whole process. Like, we had Isaac for 2 days, and that's more than a lot of dads actually have their son or daughter for. Yet there's a lot of dads who are actually affected by this, who have the ups and downs for up to 13 weeks, a couple of years, or even longer. 13 weeks is the sort of the average period that a person can have between 2 days to 13 weeks in the neonatal intensive care unit. And there's nothing around for men in that sort of period of time, or even in the situation. There's very limited sort of support available or accessible within that space. And to me, this is my grief process. This is given something that, finding that there was a huge gap in the marketplace, that there was nothing out there for dads, or there was very limited exclusively for dads, this is my driving thing, and it is the legacy to Isaac. And I sign off all my emails in memory of Isaac, December 2010, because this is what's made me driven to actually create this program and the organization itself.
Well, it is a wonderful thing that something so good has come out of that tragedy of losing Isaac. But I'm amazed that you've been able to achieve so much. Just since the end of last year, you've already got the organisation up. It's DGR status.
Yeah.
Perhaps you might explain to us what that means for people who want to support you.
Yeah. Well, one of the wonderful things about this is that we've actually been given we're fully registered as ATO compliant. So DGR status means that any donation over $2 is fully tax deductible. From what we understand, we've been very lucky in terms of the time frame. Usually it takes various organisations numbers of months or even years to sometimes get it. We were fortunate to facilitate it in 6 weeks. But again, it comes back in terms of what we've done is we've structured the organisation to make it as efficient and transparent as possible. There is a definite need out there, which everyone has actually understood, and that's why we've gotten so much support for it. By providing, going through the compliance standpoints, if we got the right things, donations, anyone can donate over $2 and it's tax deductible, which means that we're a much more attractive sort of organisation than some of the others. And there are a number of wonderful organisations out there that do fantastic support but are unable to get that DGR status. And that's something that we want to continue and build with. And we hope there's a number of people, one, that can access the service, and two, that actually can support us in various ways.
Yeah, so just so everyone's aware, that means any donations to Pillars of Strength, you are able to claim that tax deduction, so that makes an enormous difference for people who wanted to support you.
That's correct.
And you mentioned you had 2 days with Isaac. When did you find you needed the most strength? Was it in those 2 days or was it afterwards?
It's every day. Yeah. it's never... The situation with us, I've got another son, and the situation that arose is that we basically went through 26 weeks of not having an issue, then all of a sudden all hell broke loose. Those 2 days, there was a need for us to, it's a whirlwind. You don't realise the ups and downs, you don't know what to do, what things are out there, what you can actually, you just need someone there to support, or you need a little bit of time out. For me, with actually losing him, it was after the fact. It's consoling and dealing with my wife and making sure that she was okay, making sure that all of the rigmarole that's going through, and even now, we have our ups and downs, and the support is continuously required. That time out that's integral to any individual is required on a regular basis. Because in terms of one of the things that we've actually identified through our various research and other things is that we've understood that 80% of all relationships fail after having a significant trauma like this.
That's an extraordinarily high number, isn't it? 80%.
It's huge. And if you take that in consideration, that 44,000 children are placed in a special care or neonatal intensive care unit every year, 1,000 of those die, 68,000 individual children are hospitalised, and from those significant traumas, 80% of relationships fail, you've got to have some sort of outlet.
Yes.
Because the little tiny things bottle up and get bigger and bigger and fester away and become huge things. So my wife and I, we fight over little tiny things that we never fought over before.
Mm.
But having a little outlet, it gives me the opportunity and gave me that time before, during, and even now, to actually go out and re-energize and refocus, to take my time out and have my own little situation that I can deal with. And it is hard. It's a lonely situation which a lot of men deal with, and they don't know how to, and there's not much around, and that time out is very integral to them, because you can have a mate sitting next to you and that's having time out. Talking, you're not even talking about Isaac or what you've been going through or you've lost son or even that situation, but having that time out where you're not thinking about that process is just an amazing sort of opportunity for you.
Well, you've got the advantage that you recognise the danger of these parental breakdowns, and both you and your wife would see the signs, I guess, which must be some assistance. But I understand what you're saying. I can imagine you'd never really feel out of it. You've still got to be conscious of it, even a year later or longer.
Well, we'll never actually lose the hurt or the pain of losing our son. That's always going to be with us, and it is hard every day. But the one thing, and in the first 3 months, our lives were just in absolute turmoil in terms of what we had to deal with. I had to make sure that my wife was okay, and I had to make sure that my son was okay. I had to make sure that everyone, all of the things were, the I's were dotted and the T's were crossed. We had to go through all the different documentation. We had to make sure that anything that was involved with this whole situation that we controlled. That was going back to work, having to deal with all of these idiosyncratic things. And that takes a huge toll. It's been that communication channel to all family members and to the outside world. People will talk to you and say, oh, how's your pregnant wife? And you go, oh, I'm sorry, my son's passed away. Those things take a huge burden on you. And most men don't have an outlet for it.
Well, men are generally perhaps not as good communicators as women anyway, so if you're suddenly put in the situation when you're battling all your own demons to be the great communicator, it's another burden. And you mentioned you've got another son. I'm sure you must have been very conscious of not putting, everything on Isaac when you've got another son that needs your support and your help and your usual fatherly instinct as well.
Yeah, that's it. And he was a blessing in the whole situation. He's been one of the sort of the saving graces for us. And I can't imagine how hard and how difficult it may be for another individual who doesn't have a child to go through this. It was difficult enough for us.
Mm-hmm.
But to someone to have that whole scenario of the build-up of their first child and then to lose them through either stillbirth or, in our case, the neonatal sense, it is difficult. And within the intensive care unit, you go through the rigmarole of the highs and the lows. Like, I had 2 days of this, and as difficult as it sounds, it was a blessing in disguise that Isaac passed away for us, because we could have been there for 13 weeks not knowing whether he was going to be good one day or bad the other, if he was going to survive the night. And that's what individuals go through on a daily basis.
Mm.
And the men have no outlet for them.
Yes, you've mentioned, I mean, men in this situation go through different trials than perhaps the mothers do. I wonder if you could tell us, you mentioned one was that they're expected to tell everybody they're the communication tower, and there are other challenges, I'm sure, that affect men differently than they affect women.
Mm. Well, one of the big things for me, and I can only speak from my personal experience, and I've spoken to other dads about this. With our situation, I had to protect. Our first instinct as men is protect our partners or wives. and to fix things. One of the best things that I've learnt is that I can't fix this. So I have to go along with the scenario. So if my wife wants me to control the situation and not allow people to communicate to her because she's grieving, I have to block all of that. That's a huge burden that you have to undertake, but you have to protect your wife. Second part of it is that you have to control everything else that's going around. So in the case of losing a child, you have to make sure that all of the forms that come in, so you get a birth certificate, you get a death certificate, you have to register for the with Centrelink for different, it's like the baby bonus and then the death scenarios. There's all of these other processes that you have to go through to do all the registrations, all these files you have to fill out. So that all those menial clerical tasks and administration-wise that you never actually expected or thought that you had to do, you'd have to control. You have to also keep that away because that's very sort of... It's very difficult for wife or partner or the other person to deal with because it's a reminder every single piece that you get. You get an ether to spill for something that goes through. The other situation that we have is that you worry about finances. So in a lot of cases, a significant number of cases, the dad has to go back to work straight away because you've gone from two wages to potentially one wage to potentially no wage and no salary, so no income. So you've got the mortgage that you've got to worry about. You've got all of those extra things that people just take for granted at times. All of those things add up and become a major burden on that individual like myself.
So you probably feel you just want to go away to a cave or something rather than get involved with all this.
It's extremely overwhelming. And the difficult thing is that there is no outlet for a man because it's not the blokey thing to go and have a chat to your mates and go and I have problems right now about this. I feel bad about myself. I can't do this. I can't handle it. You have to be the strong person there. You have to show that you are that strong individual. You have to protect and support and cover off all aspects there because it's not the Australian bloke situation to do is say, I need help. And that's the challenge that we all have. And that's one of the biggest things that I did find through this process. And I was speaking with other dads who have been through either the situation of losing a child or actually going through to the other end and having a successful outcome of 2 weeks, 6 weeks, 13 weeks in the NIC, they've had the same situation. They've had to be the blokey thing. It's not the right thing to talk to their mates about it, although their mates want to be there to support them. It's not Australian and a bloke to talk about, I need help, I need your support, do this. So what we're trying to do is that informal way of taking them along that pathway or bringing it back to, here's an opportunity for your mates, your family to support you in a very simple way, but it's also an effective way, and that potentially will open that communication channel for you. And that's in its simplest form.
Yes, well, because there are currently no services exclusively available for fathers in this period, are there? And so you're filling a very desperate need there in what you're offering. And perhaps you could tell us what you are offering.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, we actually have a timeout program and we have an in-hospital support program. The pilot's been operating at Royal North Shore since August and we've had about 40 people go through it so far. So it's been, and we've been very lucky with it. So the key thing for our timeout program, which is probably the core aspect to me, what happened when I actually went through the situation was I had to take care of everything. My story is, as everyone knows, I lost my son after 2 days. We spent many hours in the NIC and we just had no outlets. A mate of mine spent 45 minutes on the phone forcing me to play golf. And I wouldn't have a bar of it for the first little while. And just finally to shut him up, I said yes, that I would. And I only with the blessing of my wife, because it's always the right thing to do. But that actually was probably the best thing that I ever did in that situation. And I had 4 hours outside of dealing with the hospital, dealing with the grief that I was going through, dealing with everything else, and having some sort of sense of normality that was brought back into my whole world. That gave me that time to re-energize, think about other things for once in that whole period, look at things in a different light, and refocus so I could actually come back and support my wife and support our program and progress and what we could do. So that made me bring in the scenario. So the Time Out program, what we're trying to do is providing, just simply in terms of providing opportunities to access sporting events or sporting and fitness activities. So we've provided tickets to NRL games. We've provided tickets to the cricket coming up through New South Wales cricket. The NRL's been great with the tickets going to the different NRL games that have been around, and so have some of the clubs. We've offered a hit at the driving range. We're working in at the moment, we've got Fitness First on, that every dad who goes in the NICU gets actually a 5-day pass to the gym. One of the biggest things I found is that I, unlike a lot of men, is that there's no blame, but you're very angry inside and you need to release that somewhere. And what better way is to go and actually sweat it out at a gym, or go and hit a golf ball as hard as you can, instead of turning to alcohol or anything else.
Yes, we're speaking with Gary Sillett, who is the founder of Pillars of Strength. Gary, look, I think golf is an excellent idea because you're worrying about the particular lie of the ball, but in the background, all these things are going through your mind. You get a chance to get out and in the nature and to have a walk on the grass, and a lot of things I'm sure would sort themselves out as you do your 18 holes. But I think that's an excellent thing. But do you line up partners, or I mean, how does it work for this program of Time Out?
With the pilot program that we're actually operating at the moment, we actually are making it that the dads either have their mates take them or their family go with them. It's a simple way to actually engage mates into this whole process, and it's a really good support mechanism for them. One of the things that we did find, and we have found within this whole the pilot program at Royal North Shore, is that we've had all of the mates ask, what can they do? And as a dad, you say, oh, you can't do anything for me, mate. Don't worry about it. This is the opportunity and the ideal opportunity for them to get engaged and to be involved, to actually take someone out. Because it's the first point of giving them some sort of direction to actually assist their mate. It's giving them that time, bring out, to bring them to take that time out. We are looking at, and we just have to do a little bit of work around this at the moment, is actually having them access and having the opportunity of them to going with a dad or a father that's been through it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So someone like my situation, we've got about 20 or so dads who have been engaged in this. But we have to make sure that everything's right, and we've got to go through the training program. So we're not looking to roll something out like that until probably about February next year.
Mm-hmm.
So our pilot program right now is just in getting the mates and the family to take them. So it could be a brother, it could be a father. The one thing I would have loved my dad to have done is take me out for a beer, just him and I. Or take me to a football match or something, so that was just our time, or one of my brothers to do the same. That never eventuated, but that's something that would have been just a really good thing to do. And we've had a mate just up the road who's had his son who's been really sick in hospital, and he was in hospital for 6 weeks and in and out of hospital after that for 2 weeks. He'd come down and see me, and all he wanted to do was not talk about doctors, not talk about this and that and how his son was going. It's like all he wanted to do was go out to watch his beloved Tigers play footy on the weekend, because that was his 1 hour of time out or 2 hours of time out, that all he had to do was think about that and not worry about the situation.
Yes, because you don't offer counselling. It's more just an outlet for the dads, I suppose.
Yeah, one of the critical things for us is that we're not a counselling service. There are so many counselling services around that provide counselling for both bereaved and also for individuals there. We were act as the conduit to assist people going through that way, and we already have done so with various organisations. We have partnerships that we're currently engaging, and we have lined up with major organisations such as SIDS and KIDS. There are fantastic services out there that do provide counselling services. So we want to be the complementary partner to that. The challenge is most dads either don't know how to access those counselling services or don't want to access those counselling services. In the research we've done and from my personal experience and chatting to other dads, what we've actually found is that they want time out, they want support, but they don't want to go to a men's support group.
Mm.
They don't want to go to a support group with women, and because that's going to be dealing with 8 women or 15 women instead of just their wife or partner, and they don't want to go to a counselling service in the first instant because that's in 4 brick walls and a door closed and very sterile environment. Their support or outlet and their need is to potentially go to a football match with a couple of mates or to go with someone that's been in a like situation. They may never even talk about what had happened. However, that's support for them in the first instance. And it gives a huge conduit to them to actually then re-engage, and a mate may be able to talk to them about what is happening, or the family member may be able to talk to them about, okay, you've gotten to that step, they can go through the counselling services that are there.
Now, you also have some in-hospital support, I understand.
Yes, we do. Again, it comes back to the stresses. If we can reduce the stresses to any family, and in particular dads when they're there, we try to make it easier. So one of the things that we're doing is providing every family, every child gets an introduction pack. We have a Pillars of Strength pack that goes in there, which is exclusively for dads. So in the introduction pack, they receive a parking pass because, as everyone's aware, when you go to park in a hospital, it's a very expensive venture.
Certainly North Shore Hospital, I'm familiar with that.
Oh, every hospital across Australia is a very expensive venture. So one day is equivalent to $25-$30. So you're looking at a significant amount of money over the period of time. If you're there for 2 days to 2 weeks to 13 weeks, which some of our the families are there for, that's a huge cost to them. So by being able to reduce that burden slightly, and it's only a small gesture, but it's more a very tiny gesture, which is very helpful for them because it's one thing the rest. The stress that a person or individual has to go down, has to fill in all these really complicated forms to get a parking pass, to go and give it to the parking people there, how we're trying to do it is to facilitate it so it's much easier for them. So they get a voucher which they just redeem at the NICU. So they don't have to go anywhere else in the hospital. They can just go straight from their car to the hospital NICU. They can redeem their pass, and then they've got their pass for the week. The second part of it, again, comes back to finances. If you're going from 2 salaries to 1 salary to potentially no salary, you don't know how long you would be able to be off for. Some dads need to come off, need to go back to work straight away to pay for their mortgages. So we've actually, we're piloting a financial advisor and having access to a financial advisor, which will come to the hospital and provide general financial advice around their situation. This gives a good indication to them is like, in terms of potentially what sort of time frame that they could actually have off. So some dads don't take any time off at all, whereas they could, because I don't think they'd be able to. Others don't know, and I'm for one, it's like, you don't know what you can do with your mortgage. It's a huge stressor to you, but there are opportunities that you can facilitate it, but what are the implications? To have someone there that actually can meet you in the hospital, go through a general advice and give you some sort of background of this is what you're doing and this is what options that you have available to you, we're hoping we'll actually reduce that stressor there. And again, with the pack, they get the 5-day parking voucher, and then they get the information that's available to them that they actually can access the timeout. We do have some other hospital support programs that we're looking to roll out in February, but we're just finalising our programs with some of our partners at the moment.
Well, see, I mean, you're moving so quickly. Another event that I just wanted to let people be aware of is that on 17th of February 2012, you're going to have a golf day, and you're associated with this inaugural Sydney Olympic Park Business Association Golf Day. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that one. Well, the one great thing is that we've actually had some fantastic partners that have come on board to support us. And like any program or organisation that's a charity-based thing, it needs money to actually facilitate some of the programs that we're actually running and operating. it'd be amazing if we could get government support, and we're going down that pathway, but there's no government support at the moment. So one of our partners came to us and said we'd like to put on our golf day. We've already got a major sponsor, which is the Sydney Olympic Park Business Association. We're looking for other golf sponsors. But on February 17 next year, we've actually got a golf day at Twin Creeks out at Dunham. Fantastic course. We've got a number of celebrities that are both our ambassadors and other individuals that are coming along to participate in it. And they're hoping to raise a minimum of $20,000 on the day so it can go to support some of our programs that are there. It's looking like it's a fantastic day already with just some of the feedback. We've already had some great registrations, and yeah, there's a limited number of people able to get on there, so if anyone's interested, they can go to our website and register online.
That's great. Could you tell us the website, Gary?
It's www.pillarsofstrength.com.au.
Okay, I'm sure if you Google Pillars of Strength, that will lead you in the right direction. And Gary, I know in the future you're planning to expand to other departments that deal with childhood illnesses. You've got oncology, there's fatal motorsport accidents. The possibilities are endless, really, aren't they, for the work that you're doing?
Well, one of the big things that we've found is that there is, like, for every 90 women's services, there's only 2 male men's services. There's a number of support programs out there for the women that are engaged in here. There's some fantastic programs out there. But across all of the areas, there is nothing there to support the male, so the partner, the husband, or otherwise in there. So we are looking at that, because this is the personal section to me, the neonatal intensive care unit and the Newmore Cancer Centre was the great starting point. If it works there, because that's probably one of the most emotive places, having a newborn that is sick, if we can actually facilitate the model right, that can be replicated across other newborn care centres across the state in Australia, and then go into oncology, into the paediatrics, because we all know of the numerous things that are, like, the oncology units that have all of the children in there. There's fantastic sort of services available, but there is nothing there to support the men. So we're looking at branching out to the paediatrics and oncology, also looking at the long term in terms of the terminally ill and disability, people with a disability. Working previously in the disability space, the number of husbands and partners there that actually had a child or an adult with a disability that didn't have that support mechanism or network for them, or that time out that they need, because it is a full-time role to actually have someone with a disability under your care, just giving those sort of opportunities to that wide things. There is nothing available in any space at all that we understand in a formal basis. So this is where, if we start and we do it right in the newborn care centre, we can actually replicate and build it out so we can offer our services to all those different groups.
That's wonderful. Gary, we're running out of time, so we wish you all the very best in these all these areas you're working in, and we hope the golf day is a great success, and that you're moving at such a rapid pace. We'd like to stay in touch and see how you're getting on, but just for today, thank you very much for being on the program. Gary Sillett, the founder of Pillars of Strength. Gary, once again, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you very much, Bill, and thank you for the opportunity. And it's just give you the website again, just in case. It's
sure.
www.pillarsofstrength.com.au. That's PILLARSOFSTRENGTH. And if there is anyone out there that actually is interested in the service or interested in supporting us, please get in touch with us. And we look forward to chatting to you again, Bill.
Thank you very much, Gary. And it's Pillars of Strength. Go there with, and I'm sure you'll get all the help you need. So once again, thanks, Gary.
Thank you.
grow so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child.
What do you care? It's not like you were ever there anyway.
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437 or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
And welcome back to Dads on the Air this 22nd day of November 2011. And our next guest is Michael Bourne, who's a neonatal nurse in the Newborn Care Centre of the Royal North Shore Hospital in Sydney. Michael, good morning.
Good morning to you. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. And I think you might be on leave, so thank you very much for talking to us today.
Not a problem. Yeah, I'm on the other side of the country at the moment. It's beautiful over here.
Yes, well, it must make a change from being in the Newborn Care Centre, I'm sure.
It has been a very big change, yes.
Michael, we've been speaking to Gary Sillett, who's the founder of Pillars of Strength, and he's had his child in the neonatal centre, or the newborn care centre at Royal North Shore. I wonder if you could just tell us a little bit about the work you do there.
Yeah, look, we look after significant, or most of the preterm babies that come into our unit are from sort of 24 weeks and onwards. And any other babies that may have complications during delivery. So they're mostly our clientele. So next time you hold a can of Coke, that's about the same size as a 20 baby born at 24 weeks or about 16 weeks premature.
Wow. So you could hold the baby in your hand, effectively.
You can do, yeah. Well, particularly my hands. My hands are a little bit bigger than some of the girls that I work with. But, yeah, so they're about 500 grams.
And when you have a baby that size, you must I don't know if you ever harden to it, but it must be very distressful for the or distressing for the parents when they go through the whole birth process and they have this tiny little baby at the end of it.
Yeah, look, for us it does become a little bit of a job, but for every person, and this is something that we do need to remember, for every person that comes through, usually it's their first time, it's their first experience going through this process, and so it is a very daunting and very overwhelming situation. It is an intensive care area, and it does actually live up to its name. It's a lot can happen very quickly, and it is quite an overwhelming circumstance. So for these parents, it is very traumatic, and something that the hope that they'd had for a healthy term baby has obviously been changed quite significantly when they do come into an intensive care area.
Yes. Now, I think you deal with about all the newborn care centre at Royal North Shore Hospital deals with approximately 500 babies each year. What sort of success rate do you have as far as long-term survival?
Look, the success rates vary depending on the gestation of the babies. The older the baby is, or the further along in the gestation, the higher the success rate goes. So for a baby that's born at about 24 weeks gestation, we have about a 65% survival rate, and that dramatically increases. So by the time they're born at about 30 to 32 weeks, at about 32 weeks they have about the same success rate as, or almost the same success rate as a baby born at term. Which is about 99%. So it is a bit of a sliding scale, and it does also depend on why the baby is born early. If it's due to the mother's blood pressure issues, or if there's other complications happening, or if there's an infection. So all of these things do affect why the baby's born and how the baby will survive and any other potential complications from that.
Mm. Well, it's great that you're doing this work because I suppose, you know, like 100 years ago, all these babies would have died, wouldn't they?
They would have, yeah. And look, I mean, we've come ahead in leaps and bounds. These days, the ventilation processes that we can reuse and the ability to assist the baby in its breathing and its blood pressure and getting its heart to function properly. These things have come along in leaps and bounds. So at the moment, within our nursery, we can sort of do an ultrasound of the baby's heart, gauge how effectively it's beating, and potentially give it medications in order to manipulate the contractile or the heart's ability to beat and how quickly and effective it does that. So these days it has come ahead in leaps and bounds, but unfortunately we are dealing with babies that are born premature or are born sick and do have significant complications. And so there is always a relatively high risk that sometimes these babies may pass away.
Yes, so my understanding of pediatrics, and I guess even more so for newborns, is that things move very quickly. So if there is a change in condition, you don't really have time to have a cup of coffee and think about it. You've just got to jump in and do something, I suppose.
It is. It's when something happens, it is incredibly... it happens very quickly. And it is. It's boots and all. Everyone, the whole team will rally around whoever's looking after that baby. And at times you can have sort of two or three doctors and five or six nurses that are effectively just working and managing that baby's condition. And then once it is stabilised, it does seem that there is this overwhelming calm that does happen. Mm. And the babies do often recover from those acute injuries quite quickly. Their capacity to change and adapt is absolutely amazing. But yes, things do happen incredibly quickly for babies.
And does someone look after the parents while all this is going on? Well, I imagine you wouldn't want them to perhaps involve themselves too much when there's all this high technical stuff going on.
Look, we do our best. Our attentions are diverted. Predominantly they're on the baby. And this is part of the difficulty. Often the parents are watching things happen to their precious child that they don't understand what they are. They don't understand what is actually happening, and I don't think they really understand what the baby's going through during these times and why they need all of these interventions. I guess they understand that the baby's sick, but I don't think they either understand the gravity of the situation or can compute really because of all the shock that's actually happened. So unfortunately the parents usually get sidelined. They get sort of, particularly the dads, usually the mother's still being cared for by the midwife, so she has a support network that and her family can usually see her quite quickly after the birth, but the dad is often standing there watching all of these things happen to this child that he's, you know, meant to protect, and is, you know, all of the sort of paternal instincts are coming out, going, look, I really want to protect this child, and there's six or seven people in the way poking and prodding his son or daughter. And that is a very difficult time for the parents, and it's also a difficult time for the nurses because we do have this, we do get distracted by other things that are at hand instead of looking out for the parents.
Yes, I can imagine the helpless feeling when you hand your baby over in that situation. And you mentioned...
Well, unfortunately, sorry, sometimes it's not even handed over. Sometimes the parents don't even get the chance to touch or see the baby. The baby's just taken out by the obstetrician or by the midwife. Something's happened and it's placed directly into our care. And so the parents are often, they have limited or even no contact with their child. And that is, I mean, it's something that we do try and work on, but it is part of the complication as well, yeah. Mm.
Yes, you mentioned ventilation. Now, is that where a breathing apparatus is stuck down the baby's throat? Is that what you're talking about?
Look, there are two types. One is that ventilation. There is a tube placed that goes into the baby's lungs and it either can breathe for the baby or assist baby breathing. The other one is where we can actually blow. Because of the anatomy of the baby, we can support the baby's breathing directly without having to put a tube down the baby's throat. Ironically, the pressure support that we call it, or CPAP, it looks more invasive. There's more things strapped around the baby's face, but they're not actually going necessarily into the baby's body as far as the tubes are. So often it looks worse. The limited support looks worse, but it is less invasive. But the tube does directly go into the baby's lungs and can breathe for the baby. And there's a couple of different types of ventilation that we can use for that. So,
yes, more distress for the parents, I'm sure. We're speaking with Michael Bourne, who's a neonatal nurse in the Newborn Care Centre of the Royal North Shore Hospital in Sydney. When the worst happens, and if a child does die in the Newborn Care Centre, is there a protocol as far as telling the parents?
Look, this is the difficult. Well, the difficult thing with death is that sometimes you can see it coming, and sometimes everything happens so quickly that you just cannot gather, or you cannot sort of recover and get abreast of what's happening. And so, when there is a baby that is looking like it's passing away, there's a lot of we try to have as much communication and parent involvement during that time, but sometimes this can't happen. So we do assist, or we do attempt to get the parents in and as close to the baby as possible during this period of time, and we do also try to involve and talk and sort of almost immediately debrief the parents as to the potential outcome that this is happening. And like you said, with preterm babies, these things happen very, very quickly. And so sometimes the parents have just gone out for a cup of coffee and then things will suddenly change. Or sometimes with the baby and with the birth, the baby struggles to breathe properly. The assistance isn't necessarily enough. And so there is this inability to support the baby's life and throw in a lot of other complications. Sometimes the death and the protocol to walk someone through death is thrown out the window in the attempt of trying to sort yourself through and sort what's actually happening to this baby. So we do have a protocol within the nursery that does outline exactly, you know, what to do in the event of a death, and but it's more on the medical side of things. It's less on the this is how you introduce it to a parent, or this is how you talk to a parent about the possibility of their child dying, and this is, you know, this is how we support and emotionally support a person that is going to have to grieve for the loss of a loved one. And I must admit, sometimes the easiest option is to say, "Oh, look, I'll just call a social worker."
Yes.
Because you know, it is such an overwhelming process, even for people that deal with death on a regular basis. The grief and the loss of having a baby that passes away is always raw, and there's always loss. You know, while the baby has life in it, there's hope. There's always hope when there's life. As the baby starts to deteriorate and it dies, that hope has been cut. And so whenever you're trying to sort of hold someone's, you know, the hope of life together, there is a little bit of reassurance. But when that goes, it doesn't matter how much protocol or how many right words you say, it's always a tough, it's always a terrible and tragic situation.
Mm. Yes, it must be very hard for you at times, but I guess that's balanced by the good news stories when you do bring a baby back from the brink.
Look, it is very rewarding. It's always lovely to be able to reunite a family with a baby. And sometimes there's a long process, you know, with a baby that's born at 25 or 26 weeks that does fit into the palm of your hand and does require intensive care for weeks at a time. And then after 2 or 3 weeks, once the baby's breathing and is a little bit more stable, the capacity to sort of get them out for a cuddle for the parents or have the parents change the nappy and take the temperature and just the basic cares that every other mother will take for granted or every other father will take for granted. Just for those small snippets of intimacy, they're fantastic, and that's what we truly live for. That's what we really enjoy, and trying to involve these parents to touch their babies and to bond with their babies, particularly after they've, you know, been stripped away. You know, that process where the baby's born, it's automatically taken away. The father kind of usually walks about, you know, 3 or 4 meters behind all of the time, and then as we try to encourage these this bonding and this intimacy to develop, that is some of the most wonderful time you'll ever have with a parent and with a baby and within this intensive care area.
And Michael, have you had anything to do with Gary Sillett and his Pillars of Strength?
Look, I have. We are very thankful within the neonatal nursery to have his support, and for all of the work that he's done. He's done a fantastic job to support other fathers that have been through a very, very difficult time. this pillars of strength is something that we desperately needed. Other things have come up and gone down that in regards to sort of supporting men and supporting the supporting role within the family structure. The women get a lot of support. They get a lot of support from the midwives. They get a lot of support from other mothers that spend their days and their weeks at the nursery. But the men often either have to go back to work after a few days, or they have other commitments which they need to continue to work along, and so often get left in the shadows. So the support that Gary's setting up and has been assisted with within the neonatal network, this Pillars of Strength is just fantastic. It was close to my heart to. And it has been publicly acknowledged on numerous occasions, but the capacity to get something off the ground like this and to support men is just fantastic.
Yeah, I was amazed at the extraordinary effort that he's put into it to have everything moving so quickly. I think it's wonderful, and I just hope it. As you say, it's one that doesn't disappear; that it gets stronger and stronger, and keeps performing that purpose.
Look, we're going to do everything that we can to support Pillars of Strength. It is a niche. It is something that the men do need. The grieving process for men does seem to take on a different role to that of women, and it doesn't necessarily work and assist by, men sitting down and talking about their feelings. They do need other avenues in order to explore. But the hope is to support men, not through direct intervention, but facilitating support structures and networks and friendships that already exist, and to utilise men's friends and family to come together and support men. This has been wonderfully facilitated by Gary in providing sort of tickets to football events and to other social events where men can come around and they can support each other through just being with each other, not necessarily having to talk and debrief and socialise, but just having something in their hands or watching something that they can just sit there and know that other people are there around them, know that everyone around them is either aware of their current struggles or has been through similar struggles, and just be aware that there are people around them that do love them and care for them.
Now, Michael, we've spoken about the wonderful work that's going on at the Royal North Shore Hospital and now the Pillars of Strength. You've got intensive care accommodation for 9 babies on the full respiratory support, I understand, there at Royal North Shore. Are there ever situations where the 9 are taken up and you need desperately to have another bed there?
Yeah, look, what happens in those regards, in that sort of situation, is that all of our beds are managed statewide. So there's a statewide database that we log onto, and that's run through a program called NETS, which is Neonatal Emergency Transport Services, and they also deal with pediatric patients as well. But they manage our beds, and so if we need beds or if we have a patient that requires a bed, we can contact them, and they will arrange for a bed to be found within the state. Mm. But the difficulty with that is that people are then being transferred out of their security comforts and out of their support networks and away from the people that will be providing those. That support to them. So if you live on, in Gosford or somewhere like that, sometimes you can be transferred to Randwick or out to Westmead, and so you lose a lot of that support structure. And so what we're trying to do is support particularly men through these processes who don't have direct assistance to social workers or to the midwives, and provide them with a little bit of respite and a little bit of time out where they can just go and do something which takes their attention away from the direct intensive care that their patient or their children are receiving.
Yes.
So the bed status is run on a statewide basis, and patients can be moved at the drop of a hat, sort of anywhere in the state.
If they're lucky enough to go to Royal North Shore, I'm sure they get the very best of treatment there. Michael, we're just about out of time, but look, I want to thank you particularly for speaking to us on your leave and bringing you all back to the world that you've just gone away from for a short break. But it's wonderful to hear what's going on, and very informative to hear what you have to say as the neonatal nurse in this area. So, Michael Bourne from Dad's on the Air, may we thank you very much for being on the show, and we wish you all the very best.
Thank you. And look, I'd like to put out a personal thanks for Gary Sillett. I think he's done a fantastic job. I think Pillars of Strength is really needed in our society. And I'd just like to encourage anybody that is aware that their friend is going through a tough and difficult process, if they could just reach out an arm and take them out for a beer or take them out to a game of football. It doesn't have to be anything deep and meaningful. You just have to be there and say, look, I'm your friend, and we're still going to travel through life with you and be a blessing to each other. So thank you very much, and God bless you.
That's great advice. Michael Bourne from the neonatal nurse is a neonatal nurse in the Newborn Care Centre of the Royal North Hospital. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
So that's just about another episode of Dad's on the Air for another week, I think, Bill. We've just about ran out of time, so probably as good a time as any to bring things to a timely halt.
Yes, that's it for today. We've had some great interviews. We'd like to thank our guests, Gary Sillett and Michael Bourne. A reminder that next week we will not be having any show next week, but we'll be back on the 6th of December with Dr. Elizabeth Celli. So don't forget, you can go to our website, which is www.dadsontheair.com.au. And in the meantime, from Bill Cable
and Ian Purdy,
it's bye for now.
Yeah. See you next week.
We're Dads on the Air. We're here because we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're Dads on the Air. We're Dads on the Air.